Guess Boogie Podcast contains explicit language and content that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, welcome to another episode of Guess Spooky Podcast, where two married guys share stories of paranormal encounters, urban legends, true crime, and other scary things from around the world. I'm Andres.
And I'm Kevin.
Wow, I almost forgot to introduce myself.
I was looking at you waiting for you.
I was like, I forgot my name.
Welcome, everyone. We forgot to make the joke that it was the 21st episode and that our podcast was old enough to drink. But that's not how age works. Also, this episode is probably really late than our usual on the 15th of each month. Life is just so crazy, guys. Anything you would like to add to that?
No, you just had your finals. Now we're free. We're free now.
I'm free. Speaking of the finals, I'm no longer a college student.
For now?
Yeah, I didn't graduate. Just the semester is just over.
So technically, you're still a college student. You're just waiting to go next semester.
I'm a flop. I didn't graduate yet.
I'm a flop. I'm not even in college.
Period. Not to agree with you, but just to, you know, period, like end of sentence.
Yeah, sure. Anyway,
So
dick.
Yeah, so I finished the semester. I'm so excited because that semester was fucking hard because I was taking two classes. And I'm glad I'm done with... The first one was astrology. That one, I hated that class. Like, I'm so glad it's over. Like,
it was what?
Astrology. No, astronomy. Oh, my God.
I was going to say, I'm like, no, I think you're mistaken.
I'm a Sagittarius. It was astronomy. And I'm glad I was looking for any excuse to get out of it. Like, I cleaned my car. The last time I talked to, we were at Midori and Rigo's house. I said, like, I feel like I have to personally apologize for making you guys fucking go into my back seat. Because it's scary back there.
It is.
But it's
every
clean.
Time I get in your car.
No,
I
it's not. Not anymore.
Well, okay.
But well, before, it was clean at one point
in
history.
I would have my feet in trash. And so.
It still is.
Wow.
The second class was philosophy. And dude, when I tell you, I got 100% on my final project. It was so good.
Good job.
I
really
like
liked your paper.
It's one of my best accomplishments I can put. I'm going to put it in my resume every single time. I'm like, I wrote a really good paper about
feminism.
About feminist morality and how it can influence the behavior of men. Oh, it was so good. It was so good. My professor was like, I need to put you in front of a group of men. I was like, no, because I don't like them. But anything else?
Yeah, we hate men. Ew.
Ew. Gross. Which is so counterproductive to the feminist movement.
Yeah.
That was literally one of my arguments.
We're men haters.
Men haters? It's more likely than you think. I'm just kidding. Welcome, men. All the men. All the two men that listen to us are like,
I know.
I'm out of here.
When we look at our, what is it called? Our...
The like demographics.
Yes. And it's like mostly women.
Mostly
like,
women and non-binary people. So we love that for us.
Yeah.
But everyone is still welcome.
Target audience.
I ain't gonna say anything. But what else has been going on before we jump into the story?
I've been hiking a lot. Did I talk about that in the last episode?
Yes.
You
fell into a river with Brittany.
Oh, that's right. So yeah, I'm trying to see all of Oklahoma. Have you noticed that the weather's kind of weird this year?
What do you mean?
5/20. It's May 20th today, right now.
Uh-huh.
This time last year, it was already in the 80s. Sunshine every day, and it's like cloudy, and it's still in the 60s and stuff like that.
Honestly, I don't mind it. This is my ideal.
Right, I don't mind it either, but I'm just saying that the weather is very strange this year.
Yeah, that's true.
We also had that really weird, like, week and a half.
The blizzard and the ice.
Where it was, like, minus 10 degrees for, like, a week.
Oh, that polar vortex.
Yes, that was this year.
Dude, I'm so glad the little street cat survived.
I know. We have a new one.
There's a new street cat almost every week.
Every week.
There's a new street cat dropped. Every week.
They keep telling each other, they're like, well, I know this restaurant. I know this spot.
Five stars.
I know this spot. Let's go. Sometimes they forget to feed us in the morning or at night. But when they got food, the food's good. Let's go.
It's good. It's so worth the wait.
When they're sold out. When they're not sold out, it's good. I did see something really interesting on the Neighborhood app.
Whoa.
Or the next, is it the Nextdoor app?
Yeah, Nextdoor.
Nextdoor. So I thought it was so interesting, and I refrained from telling you because I wanted to talk about it on the podcast. Because
you wanted to scare me live. Okay.
No, I wasn't going to scare you, but a few days ago, somebody posted, and this was when it was raining at the beginning of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody posted, weird animal on 79th. That was interesting. I looked out the window and saw some sort of large animal crossing the street and crawl down into one of the storm drains. The thing had to be 3 to 5 feet long.
What the fuck? Wait, it was standing?
It says crawl. It said
crawling.
Crawl.
It was crawling.
So it was crawling, but it was 3 to 5 feet long in the daytime, and this person couldn't figure out what it was.
Well, don't triangulate where we live, but it sounds... Oh my god, what if it's an alligator?
Yeah, alligators in the sewer.
Do you remember a few years ago, there was supposedly an alligator spotted near Humboldt Park in Chicago?
I don't doubt it.
Mm.
People literally buy these animals,
mm-hmm,
and raise them until they get too big. And instead of like surrendering them, because I know they'll get in trouble, they just like throw it back in the water.
Oh, yeah, because it's illegal to own them.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Do you remember that big snake that... God, didn't it get out of the zoo or something, and it was in someone's backyard?
I don't remember that.
It was near our old apartment. I'm not going to say where. The old one.
Wait, I do remember that.
Yup.
I watched a video one time of somebody that took their snake in the car, and then the snake crawled away and crawled under, like, the dashboard. Do you remember that?
No, but what the fuck?
Yes.
Like, we're going for a ride.
The snake was in the dashboard in that car for like a week until the snake came out. Or it died and they found it. Something, but this person got in trouble.
Wow, okay.
Has everybody been seeing those new UFO videos that they're releasing every fucking day?
Wait, hold
day
on.
Now?
Don't. I want to. That's actually part of my palate cleanser. You ruined it. You ruined the surprise. Christmas is ruined.
We were just talking about it at work. Like 2 days ago, yesterday, and then today,
mm-hmm,
because one of my coworkers is kind of like, oh, you know, like you don't really hear about aliens anymore and stuff. And then me and Mel were like, just looked at each other and we were like, no, ma'am. I'm like, they're literally releasing videos, and the government, the armed forces, is saying this is not an aircraft from this earth. This
Hold
is something
on,
else.
Stop. Okay, put a pin on that.
Why?
Don't forget it. Because that's part of my palate cleanser.
Well, let's talk about it. You have other things that we talk about. We can talk about it right now.
Oh, my God.
We can just move it.
There was an article. I read it. Okay, so it was written by Tom McCarthy. It was posted on March 22nd, 2021 on The Guardian. So basically, the title is UFO Reports Details Difficult to Explain Sightings, says U.S. Ex-Intelligence Director. So basically... U.S. military pilots and satellites have recorded a lot more sightings of unidentified flying objects or UFOs than have been made public, Donald Trump's former intelligence director John Ratcliffe says. Asked on Fox News about a forthcoming government report on unidentified aerial phenomena, Ratcliffe said the report would document previously unknown sightings from all over the world. Quote, frankly, there are a lot more sightings than have been made public. Some of those have been declassified, and when we talk about sightings, we are talking about objects that have been seen by Navy or Air Force pilots or have been picked up by satellite imagery that frankly engage in actions that are difficult to explain, movements that are hard to replicate that we don't have the technology for, or traveling at speeds that exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. Can you believe?
Yes. Shit is getting... I feel like we have shifted ourselves ever since the beginning of the presidency.
Ever since beginning of the, yeah. I was going to say the pandemic, like, but I was maybe, like, no, shit went crazy in 2016.
Do you remember how people were saying that 2012 was going to be the beginning of a new era or something like that? Mm-hmm. Like, the world was going to end, or, like, the era was going to be over as we knew it or whatever? Mm-hmm. I feel like since then, shit's been getting weird. Because right after Obama went out of office, then we had Donald Trump, and that was a fucking mess. But then, like, weird shit has been starting to happen now. Like, mm-hmm. we got aliens, we have a lot more sightings of Bigfoot, there's a lot more paranormal stuff going on. And now, after the pandemic, then we had the pandemic, and then now that we had the pandemic, a lot of people were home a lot, and a lot of people were reporting paranormal activity that was never noticed before in their house because they were home more.
Yep.
So, it was like, what the fuck? We have shifted into an alternate reality, shit is changing, I don't know what's going on, I'm scared. I want to cry.
Yep.
And actually, no, I just want to eat some ice cream.
Oh, can you bring some? So, hold on. Before, and on the article also says, the UFO report must be published by early June, pursuant to a clause in a COVID relief and spending package signed by Trump before he left office. Ratcliffe served about 8 months as Director of National Intelligence at the end of Trump's term. Earlier, Trump moved to nominate Ratcliffe for the role, but Ratcliffe withdrew over concerns he had exaggerated and fibbed about his experience as a prosecutor in Texas. Actually, I probably should have ended before that sentence, but that's...
So he's a liar?
So he's a liar.
No, but there's other people, like, that are corroborating about with it.
My job.
There was literally,
about my experience, I lied.
I shared a TikTok video with my coworker that was like, oh, you don't really hear about aliens anymore. I shared it because as soon as I got on TikTok, it was like, it was, a very famous news show, and they were interviewing, like, a pilot in the Navy, and they were, like, interviewing his boss, and they were like, what's going on? They're like, we don't know. Yeah,
it's definitely been corroborated by other sources in the intelligence agencies, but it's scary that they're saying that there's a lot more than there usually was before.
Well, I mean, the reason why we've, like, people have why we know so much so far is because people have said, I saw something. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine the things that nobody saw or nobody reported? Or there must have been way more than that somebody didn't see, but they saw.
Oh, yeah. For them to, like, I'm sure anything that any military personnel sees, they are not allowed to report it. Or at least they have to document it, but not release it to the public.
Yeah.
But can you imagine how many people are, like, in the Air Force doing, like, flight... training, I don't know the word. They be flying the planes and they see something. Know what I mean?
But I really want to know what it is. Like, I really want to know. There's, like,
not to be a conspiracy theorist, but if there's something coming, I don't care. I don't give a fuck.
I don't know. I just want to know what it is exactly. Like, it's like, okay, maybe aliens, but then there's, like, a little part of me that's like, what if it's just another government sending, like, weird shit? Sending, like, weird aircrafts or something. And I'm like, no, I want to know 100% for sure that this is aliens. There's always that little piece of doubt.
I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect recently.
I know, so...
So, I'm like, ooh, aliens. I don't care. Well, I don't know. So, before... Let's jump into the story, because I feel like we're getting off on a tangent.
What do you got for us
today? I go first. Okay. Okay, I think so, I kind of told you what my story was.
We both are doing true crime today, which last time we did both did paranormal.
Our listeners, we don't.
We try not to talk.
We try not to talk about. Sometimes it spills out because I'm super excited to talk about it, but sometimes Andres is so secretive.
I don't like to tell you. You don't like surprises. It's a very bad combination.
I hate it. You don't like surprises.
You get angry when you're surprised.
I fucking can't stand it.
And
I'm a Sagittarius.
Then you ask me, you're like, what are you doing your story about? And I'm like, I can't tell you.
It pains me.
I always try to do, like, a story people haven't heard of before, though. Like, I'm trying to get away from, like, the shit that we always hear about. Every fucking paranormal television show or, like, podcast is talking about the same stuff. It's like, I want to know new stuff.
Something new. Like, it's always, like, Ted Bundy or, you know, something like that. Yeah, it's always
the same. Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Loch Ness Monster. Well, that's literally
the premise of our podcast.
And it's like, there's more. There has to be more out there. It's that language barrier that keeps it. And I wish I knew every fucking language so that I could just look up these articles and just fucking type.
I'm here to help.
Anyways, we're also getting off on a tangent again. So,
one last thing.
Okay.
There have been a lot of people that have been reaching out to me and saying that they enjoy your podcast. So I just want to say big thank you to everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
We're literally just a little baby podcast. Like, we're literally recording in the back room. I have no shirt on.
Leo is sniffing Kevin's backpack. They make a lot of noise while we record sometimes, so we
do record in front of a live audience. So.
Yes.
Leo.
Sometimes we have to cut our episodes a lot because they... for some reason, like, the cats are just chill. And then as soon as we start recording and we're in a room together and we're talking, they're running around, bumping the mics, jumping on the table. They're like, ooh, let me type on this computer real quick. Let me put my paws all over.
Oh, my God. The other day when I left my laptop open, I don't know where I went. I think I went to go get something to eat in the kitchen. I came back and Excel was open. And all of it was just full of K's. And I was like, are you fucking serious? And I looked down and there's like a little smudge of a little cat paw. And I was like, I wonder who could have done this.
The other day that we went walking around the neighborhood, I literally left my computer open when I was doing my notes. And we came back and there was like, the letter M just fucking spammed on the Google Doc like for 5 pages. It had to have been more than 5 pages. It was like a lot. So Leo was sitting on the computer from the moment we left out the door until we came back, till he heard us.
5 pages.
No more. It was literally, I just had to, I literally held my finger on the backspace and I was on my phone with the other hand just watching.
I wish I knew how they opened Excel. For me, like on my laptop, like they're smart. My son is so smart.
Well, we have touch screens, so he might have hit it with his paw.
Oh, true, I guess. Well, even then. My son is so smart.
Yeah, he was trying to budget our money for us because
you guys need help.
Our spending is out of control.
Okay, back to my story though. So my story is the Frog Boys. Are you familiar with it?
The Frog Boys.
The Frog Boys.
Didn't you literally watch a video and I watched it with you?
Yes, but you weren't paying attention. I saw you on TikTok.
No, I'm sorry. I paid attention to 100% of that video because it was really good. Yes.
Okay, go ahead and summarize it.
You're going to stop me as soon as I start.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
It has to do with some boys that disappeared. It was five of them. See? Okay. You said, explain it.
Why would you ruin it? You spoiled it. Okay.
Go ahead.
So, Frog Boys. Yes, I did get this inspiration specifically from a YouTube video by Lazy Masquerade, which is also one of my sources. I got a Reddit post by user Cannibal Tofus on r/unsolvedmysteries, an AP news article by Christopher Torcha, a criminally intrigued article, a Channel News Asia article by Derek Paolo, and a blog entry with personal retellings by Elwood5566 titled Five Boys Meet Death Where the Dragon Dwells. So I know there's a lot of spoilers in those descriptions, but yes, my setting takes place on the 26th of March, 1991 in the Dalsa district of Daegu in South Korea. Can I just start by saying that transcriptions and localizations of Korean names in Western media is so stressful because...
I mean, we saw how they fucked up their names not that long ago when all those people got shot in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
They literally did no fucking ounce of research.
No research.
They were just like, and what middle name? It's like, no, that was not
her
name.
That's not how names are. In Korean specifically,
yeah, mess.
Family names go first. And then first names are usually two syllables. They're usually hyphenated between. When it's written in Korean, it looks like one word, obviously. So, this 26th of March, 1991, it was a Tuesday. That's what I had trouble with. But this is the most Korean I actually translated it, which is kind of fun. So, it was a Tuesday and a temporary public holiday, as the first regional election in Korean history was underway. So there was no school, okay?
On a Tuesday.
Club going up, and there's no school on a Tuesday.
Double-cheeked up on a Tuesday afternoon.
This was the first democratic election in 30 years in the country. So it was a big deal. So this was around 8 a.m.
Can I just interject and say that I think it's really fucking weird that the United States doesn't close down on election day? Like almost every other country in the world? Like, we have to take time off of work when every other country like literally fucking closes everything down so you can vote.
Elections, and Americans are like, it's up to you. Do you want
to
vote?
People act like they're so irritated to go vote, and it's like, this is our fucking civic duty. Get your ass up. Anyways, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I want to apologize if I mispronounce something in Korean. I'm trying my best. So it was around 8 a.m. where six children, all friends who attended Sangsa Elementary, were playing at one of their homes. They were 11-year-old Kim Young-gyu, 9-year-old Kim Jong-sik, 10-year-old Park Chun-in, 13-year-old Woo Cha-won, 12-year-old Jo Ho-yeon, and Kim Tae-ryung, which I don't know his age. They all live within the walking distance of each other, and their houses actually formed in a circle, and they were often found playing in a nearby field all the time. Everyone in the neighborhood described them as being closer than brothers. It wasn't uncommon to see them together when they weren't at school, so they hung out all the time. Tae-ryung left the group at this time to eat breakfast at home because he had missed it. Neighbors began complaining that the boys were being too loud and told them to go play somewhere else. So instead, the group of boys headed up to Mount Waryong to find salamander eggs, located to the west of their town. They went, like, equipped with tin cans and walking sticks, which is so cute. Walking sticks for children. How cute.
They were ready.
They really were. Okay. This gets sad. I'm sorry.
This reminds me of, like, those old movies. You know, like, those movies in the 70s and 80s with the kids?
Like Stand By Me with that's exactly what I thought about doing the research. Like when I was doing the research, I was like, this is very wholesome childhood memories. I didn't have friends, so I wish I did. For reference, Mount Waryong is more of a very large hill or a small mountain, but it supposedly resembles a dragon lying face up. It's very windy, so it is easy to get lost in the surrounding forest if you were to accidentally go off track. The name of the city, Daegu, literally means large hill in Korean. So Ho-young's older brother, Mu-young, found them while riding on his bike around the town. So Tae-ryung had caught back up with the group at the time, but after finding out where they were going, decided against it after his mother had warned him not to go too far from home. So he was part of the group, he went home for breakfast, and then went back, and he's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we're gonna look for salamander eggs. And he's like,
I have to go home.
I have to go home. I have to, as my mom. Which is so aww, cute. See, that's what I mean. I was like, this is, they're literally children. Later that day, around 1 p.m., Chul Wo's father, Woo Jung-eu, received a phone call from his son's taekwondo class that Chul Won hadn't shown up. So he went around the neighborhood asking about the other boys, and he realized that the whole group of boys were missing except Tae-ryung. When asked about the boys, Tae-ryung told the other boys' parents where they had been seen last. And even Ho-yeon's older brother even told him, it's like, yeah, I saw them going up the mountain to go get salamander eggs. So the family went up to Mount Waryong to search for the boys for hours until 3 a.m. but found no traces of the children. When they reported the boys missing to the police told the families that they most likely got lost and they should wait it out if the children would come home, and if they didn't, they would consider them runaways. So from the very beginning,
there's already fucking problems.
They seems like they already had a solution.
Why is it that? And I'm sorry I'm interrupting you again, but why is it that police just seem like the laziest sacks of shit in whatever country they're from?
Because police aren't meant... doesn't matter
what country they are.
They're not meant to stop crimes. They're meant to arrest people and to kill people, I guess.
Jesus.
So at this point, the authorities, according to them, there was no case. There was no case to investigate. All they said is like, oh yeah, they'll come home eventually.
Wouldn't they even think like these kids are little? Like, why wouldn't they say, oh, you know, they may be runaways right now, but let's go look for them. Like, mm-hmm. They didn't even try.
That same night, Kim Young-do, Kim Young-gyu's father, claims to have dreamt seeing his son outside in the rain. He said the boy opened the door to peek inside, but ran outside shortly after. In the dream, Young-do ran after him, calling his name, but Young-gyu never looked back. 4 days after the reported disappearance of the boys, Kim Young-gyu's father received a phone call from a strange man telling them, I have the children. They are all suffering. Two are very ill. The caller called for a ransom to return the children back to the families and asked them to bring the ransom money to a specific location. So the family and the police went to the location, but after an hour, no one showed up. Everyone returned home. It was later found out that the call was a prank.
What the fuck, dude?
What the fuck, exactly.
People are sick.
Initially, this story wasn't like front news because, like I said, the pro-democracy movement in Korea was growing. Like, it was just starting to pick up pace. So that was what everyone's attention was on instead. Everyone was kind of more focused on the election that had just happened instead of, you know, local news, I guess. Uh-huh. So the story started growing and spreading to other parts of the country with each passing day that the boys didn't return. After the week, the story became national news. And it's not for certain why it was changed, but it was reported that instead that the boys had gone up to the mountain to look for frog eggs. So I read a source that said it's possible that it was changed because salamanders weren't a well-known animal to the public in Korea at the time. So instead of being known as the
Salamander Boys,
they were given the name of Frog Boys or Geguri Sonyeon. The news broadcast pushed a more public effort to find the children. Theories started swirling around, such as them being kidnapped and forced to beg on the streets, which was, I guess, was a thing that people made money off of.
Panhandling, yes.
But to force people to do it?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that's where just I thought it was
wait.
Weird. It's like,
just wait for my motherfucking story.
They're outsourcing?
Like, keep going.
Okay, murder or kidnapping by North Korean spies, either abducted by UFOs, or that they were victims of a group of people suffering from leprosy due to a legend that the liver of a child could supposedly cure the illness.
What the fuck?
Yeah, okay. So pictures of the boys were posted on cigarette packs, milk cartons, candy wrappers, cartoons, billboards. Age-progressed photos were constantly updated and posted in nearby areas of the town. So the boys' elementary school started a campaign to help find them. There are actually photos I saw of students holding up signs saying, Dora Ola, Geguri Sonyeon, which means, like, frog boys come home. The parents of the boys appeared in a TV program called The Square of Public Opinions, where they expressed their frustration with the police and how it seemed like they weren't actually doing their jobs.
Yeah,
it looks
literally.
Like they were just actively working to wrap it up as quickly as possible. Park Gonsa claimed on the show that the police were not interested in a thorough investigation. He even held up a flyer that the police had recently begun to hand out to the public where the wording had been changed to remove the word missing and instead say runaway. Maybe in an attempt to discourage searches in the area. Suspicious. So during the filming of the show, a call came in live of a sobbing boy asking for his mother. Hu Do-seon, which is Young-gyu's mother, confirmed that it was her son's voice, but it was later confirmed to be a prank as well. So
dude,
what
these
the fucking
fuck? Korean people and their pranks. Shit.
So the president of the time, No Tae-wo, who was born and raised in Dalsong, which borders Dalsa, also made a statement on the case to help find the missing boys and ordered an official search around Mount Waryong. A reward of 42 million won was offered for information that would lead to the boys' safe return. And this is around $37,000. U.S. dollars. Sorry to everyone else. I don't do math. Over 300,000 people, including policemen and volunteers, helped to search the area around the mountain after the president had said that he was gonna, like, he drew attention to it, basically. He also commissioned a special unit to be created specifically to find the Frog Boys. In 1992, a film called The Frog Boys was released, but the movie presented the case with no evidence. Like, it kind of set it up with, like, no evidence of foul play and played the boys out to have just ran away, like, ran away on an adventure or something. Which is weird. Because it's like, that doesn't help the family.
Why is everybody convinced that these kids ran away?
It's like, oh, they're just boys being boys. They just went on an adventure. It's what boys do. It was just weird. I don't know. So each of the father's boys, they actually quit their jobs and they just kept searching across the country, like, not determined to give up. And this was at the time when the case was, like, losing traction nationally. They rented a truck where they wrote something along the lines of, please help finding our missing sons. Let's join the Daegu Frog Boys Rescue. Daegu Frog Boy Search Committee, along with photos of the boys. They would go across literally the whole country and just hand out posters, like, try to get attention. Like, it was very noble of them. as fathers
to help them. That's so crazy. Yeah. Usually when kids go missing, they just look for them like in the immediate area and, you know, some miles around. But like they literally went through the whole country.
Yeah. So this gained the national attention of Na Ju Bong, which is the chairman of the National Organization of Finding Missing Children and Family in Korea, who joined the men in spreading awareness of the missing boys. This was when many of the men in the group noticed that Kim Hyang-do started looking pale and his face started turning blue to a sleeping pill addiction. And this is when Na Ju Bong actually noticed too. When asked about it in a future interview, he said, "I was scared to sleep. I was scared that I might encounter my son in my dreams." Ju Bong said that after seeing the boy's father like that, he couldn't turn their back on them. Like, he just was very more determined to help find them. So the men would often hold media presses at events around the country. That's where Ju Bong started to notice the same men appearing in the crowd. They would be either sitting or standing in the back of the room. So when Ju Bong approached some of them, they often, well, one in particular, he handed him a business card that just said his name and a phone number. That's it. After some time, Ju Bong came to realize that they were intelligence agency employees and they were being kept, they were keeping tabs on the families of the missing boys. And just to him, something didn't seem right about it.
That is really weird. Why would the intelligence agency be tracking the parents?
Personally, I feel like it was like they were keeping tabs on what they knew.
Or maybe they suspected them of murdering their kids. That's also possible, too.
That they were just trying to see...
Maybe try to catch them slipping up or something? Mm-hmm.
Yep. That I didn't even think about that. What the fuck? So, as time went by, news media outlets they stopped talking about the Frog Boys and eventually straight up refused to speak to them. One of the boys' fathers actually said in a video I saw that he remembers one time he was kicked out of a news station. He's like, "We're not going to do it. We're not going to cover that case anymore." So Park Chun-in's father, Park Yeon-so, said this is a quote. "The police looked for any evidence that they could find, but by then there was no point in searching because there were no traces left. The police were just following orders. They just pretended to do something. We, the parents, meant nothing to them." So 2 years later, a man by the name of Kim Ga-won, criminal psychologist who studied in the U.S., claimed that Kim Jong-sik's father, Kim Chol-gyu, had actually killed the boys and buried them under his house. Okay. According to him, he presented no evidence, first of all. No evidence at all. He said that Chol-gyu had no alibi during the first 3 hours of the day that the boys went missing. He said that he studied the case and that according to him, Chol-gyu's alibi was that it's like, "Where were you? Where were you for those 3 hours?" Specifically, he said. So police dug up Chol-gyu's house, but since they were running out of daylight, they ended up using an excavator. So after nothing was found, they left the house in ruins. So this is the part that fucking pissed me off too. Because if a group of policemen couldn't dig fast enough in 3 hours, what makes them think that one man could have done it in that same time to hide 5 bodies? Does that make sense? They literally fucking ruined this guy's house and said, "Oh, okay, well, nothing's here, bye."
Well, we see that all the time when they search your car, like when they think you have drugs.
"Oh, you have nothing in here? Okay, bye."
They fucking fuck your car up and that's take like it apart and take panels off, and then when they can't find anything, they're done. They're like, "Okay, bye."
That's like some type of fucking psychological trauma. Like, you're left fucked up and looking at your possessions, things that meant something to you, in that type of state.
Yeah,
that fucks you up. Yeah, so that and to make it worse, Chol-gyu's he died from cancer, and according to one of the other fathers, he said that he stopped fighting the cancer because all he could think about is finding his son. And he felt so hopeless of finding him. And after what they did to his house, he felt like he just couldn't keep going.
That's so sad. That poor man.
So this special police unit that was tasked by the president to find the Frog Boys actually ended in 2001. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So, this is where it gets juicy. I'm almost done, I swear. On the 26th of September, 2002, a pair of hikers foraging for acorns in Mount Waryong area discovered pieces of children's clothing and bones. So they called the police and they discovered 5 sets of child remains. So a forensic analyst and professor at Kingbuk University, Choi Jung-min, recalled seeing police officers making major mistakes. Okay, again, red flags. They didn't block off the area, so by the time the boys' families arrived, there were already a cloud walk. There's already a crowd walking through the investigation site. They were just walking around, like, what are you guys doing? The police were digging up the area with pickaxes. What? They organized bones randomly, like long bones together, short bones together, skulls together, instead of arranging them to complete a body.
What
they
year were just, was this?
2002.
Are they fucking stupid?
Exactly. That's literally what this forensic analyst said. It's like, well, not verbatim, I guess. But he was like, they should know better. They should know what to do. They do
know better.
It just seemed like...
Something fucking weird is going on. Something's weird,
yeah. So the bones had also been placed on newspapers on the damp ground. And if you guys don't know anything, because I sure as hell didn't, I guess you have to put it specifically on a cloth so it doesn't, like, so water doesn't touch the evidence. You know what I mean? So it doesn't basically get cross-contaminated or something.
Well, that, and then the paper and the ink is going to get on the bones. It has ink on it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So due to the way that the remains were handled, it was difficult to determine the case of death. And according to the video that I saw by Lazy Masquerade, is that a lot of the evidence that the police actually touched, it was like impossible to use.
They had to throw it out.
They had to throw it out. Analyzing clothes, shoes, and braces that belonged to Jo Ho-yeon, authorities confirmed that the remains were the Frog Boys. One of the boys' sweaters found had both of its sleeves tied in a knot, commonly used in industrial settings, making it impossible to have been done by the boy himself. An empty bullet casing and 3 unused bullets were found in Young-gyu's pockets. 2 of the remains were found close together, leading some investigators to conclude that the 2 boys were huddled together for warmth when they died.
That's so sad.
Police quickly suggested that the boys had died from exhaustion and hypothermia on the same night that they disappeared.
What I remember about the video that we watched is that it said that this area was had already been searched and nobody had found anything here.
Yep. Well, they 300,000 people and they didn't find this? But it took 2 people looking for acorns?
How long were they gone?
11 years.
Jeez.
Well, I mean, like initially it was 3 hours.
No, like,
or like a few hours,
from
I guess.
The moment they disappeared to the moment they found the found bones.
11 years.
So it was 11 years.
So police quickly suggested that the boys had died from exhaustion and hypothermia on the same night that they disappeared. This was by the police chief. And again, it seemed too premature to be announcing. However, forensic analysts and family members argued against it. Mount Waryong is only about 2 kilometers from Daegu, so they could have easily just walked home, especially since the lights of the town are visible from the height of the mountain. Besides, the boys were familiar with the area. It was where they grew up, so it was not likely that they would have gotten lost. Like, if they had gotten lost, they would have just walked home.
Right.
And
there was no getting lost. They knew their way home.
They grew up around it. It just seemed like when they said, oh, yeah, we're going to go get for salamander eggs, it seemed like there was a very common occurrence for them to do it. So, yeah, that's not even acknowledging that the remains were buried. If the children had died from natural causes, like hypothermia and exhaustion, like the police officer said, they would have been found on the top layer of dirt and animals would have come by to pick at them. But instead, they were buried. The police chief claiming that hypothermia was the most probable cause of death piqued the interest of the Korea Alpine Federation, who's often called on for emergencies involving rescues due to the experiences, their experience in mountainous areas. So it's kind of like... I don't know.
Search and like rescue.
A Saint Bernard. They're the Saint Bernards of South Korea. Okay, so they checked the site and confirmed that the cause of death could not have been hypothermia. Choi Won-suk, director of the team, said that he was certain that this was a murder case, adding, "That area isn't high up at all. It isn't even 100 meters from the streets. Just use some common sense. If it was cold and raining, it would have taken only 5 minutes to run home." So one of the skulls was found, like after analyzing, one of the skulls was found with holes on both sides of the skull. 3 of the other skulls were found to what appear to be created by blows with metal objects, possibly a tool of some kind, according to Kyungbuk University Forensic Medicine Team. Analysis of the soil where the remains were found concluded that the boys had died in the site, so they weren't killed somewhere and moved there, basically.
But the reason people didn't see them when they were searching was because they were underground.
Because someone buried them.
Or they may have not even died at that moment. They may have died later and somebody brought them back.
No, well, that's what it's saying, that they died there. Someone didn't kill them. They weren't moved, basically.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, like, they didn't necessarily die when they were looking for them, when they searched that area. They could have been taken somewhere else and then brought back at a later date and executed there and buried. No. That's maybe why, that may be a reason why nobody saw anything.
Oh my God, wait a minute. What the fuck? That's not even something that I even thought about, that someone might have kidnapped them alive and then took them back and killed them there.
Yeah. I mean, it's all just speculation, though. It sounds like somebody beat them.
Well, so moss growing on the remains suggested that the boys had been hastily buried. The parents began to question if there was a connection to the military because of the nearby shooting range on Mount Waryong, only 300 meters away. However, records show that there was no shooting practice scheduled the day of the disappearance due to the general election that day. The shooting range was later relocated to a nearby town in 1994. I don't know why I included that. So, according to Chalwon's father, who lived near the area, he recalls having heard a gunshot and a scream on the day of the disappearance, but no further investigation was made to the claim. I think he made that case initially when the boys first disappeared, but again, nobody looked into it.
Right.
And when they asked the boy 11 years later, it's like, did you lie? Was that true? He said yes. He stuck to his story. Today, some in the public and Pak Yon-sa suggest that the military has something to do with the death of the boys. Pak Yon-sa claims that although no shooting practices were scheduled that day, a commissioned officer would still have access to the shooting range alone if they had wanted to. Director of the Korea Alpine Federation, Choi Won-suk, confirmed that there had been reported sounds of gunshots in the shooting range to empty the remaining ammo from their gun, but to this day, no one knows who that soldier was. Najubang also suspects the idea that the military and the police were involved in the children's death, claiming that they were hiding something. Especially with how members of the intelligence agencies were keeping tags on the family, almost like keeping them in line.
That's what I was just
thinking. To know what the families and the public knew.
That's what I was just thinking. It sounds like a soldier accidentally shot one of the kids.
Well, hold on. And a shooting, accidental or otherwise, doesn't actually explain the evidence in the scene, nor does it explain the way and how the remains were found, like the knots or the sweater sleeves. Besides, I think the hole in one of the skulls was confirmed that it wasn't a bullet. I think it was. But it just seemed...
Man, how are you going to come bring me information about that?
I think they confirmed that it was. It was a bullet from that area.
So made a hole in the skull?
Yes.
So it was a bullet.
Forensic analyst Choi Jung-min believes that the children could have been victims of a random psychopathic killer. However, there was no other reported homicide victims that matched the same manner of killing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it didn't match anybody's MO.
That's the word. I was like, what? What modulus word is that? What word is that?
I used it last time we did the Spanish episode. Well,
I knew the word, but I was just like, why can't I think about it? Another story says that one of the boys may have been accidentally shot and the other boys were killed as a way to cover up the shooting.
That's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm, that's what I'm thinking.
They tied the knots on the sweater to keep them from running away. And they didn't shoot them again because they knew that people would hear the other gunshots. So they beat them in the head with whatever they had on hand.
Oh my God. I think that's probably the most probable cause, honestly. After a few years, the police were unable to conclude anything with the little evidence that they had. South Korean military denied any involvement in the death of the children. The Frog Boys were later laid to rest on the 26th of March, 2004. The families carrying their ashes to the Nakdong River, so according to them, their children could flow away into the Pacific Ocean. Pak Gonsa said that, and this was a quote, "They died together, so I wanted them to play together in the afterlife." Three lawsuits were filed against the police department who overlooked the case, but all three of them failed. So the statute of limitations expired in 2006 for this case, and no one has ever been arrested in connection to the boys' deaths. The boys' elementary school, Sangsaw Elementary, continues to mark the anniversary of the murders with a ceremony each year. South Korea abandoned the statute of limitations for first-degree murders in 2015. So basically, if new evidence is found, the Frog Boys case could be reopened in the future. And that is the story
of the Frog Boys. AKA the Salamander Boys.
AKA the Gaegore Sanyeon.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. People really do not give a fuck about kids or women. They really don't.
Yup.
No matter what country it is, they don't care about kids. They don't care about women.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make a correction. They care if that child is in the womb and not born yet. Then afterwards, they're like, that's not really our problem anymore. That's really sad. That Lazy Masquerade video about this was really good, too.
This is a picture of the boys.
They're all really young. What are they, like 7, 8, 9?
No, I explained their age. What? Besides, this picture says it. 12, 10, 11, 14, and 13.
Well, they look little. That's really sad. Sorry.
I think that was age progress. Kikuri Sanya. Bomo. They were 11, 9, 10, 13, and 12. And Kim Tae-ryong is one of the only survivors. It was a kid that said that he couldn't go to the mountain.
Because his mom said no.
That's weird to me, too, when I think about it. It's like, I wonder how he feels about that. Yeah. Not to guilt him or anything. And not to say like, oh, well, you know, you could have done something because he was a child. But I hope he doesn't like take it personally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, he's probably gone to therapy for
survivor's guilt. I think that's the word.
Yeah. Hopefully he's gone to therapy for it and has dealt with it.
Yeah.
That's really sad because, I mean, at that point, it wasn't his fault.
Now, what do you have known? I mean, and the thing is, like they said, like they were all closer than brothers.
And I guarantee you they did that all the time. Going into the woods.
Exactly.
Going walking with their walking sticks. That's something you do all the time with your friends when you're bored.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like when you live in a rural town. Because I know that when I used to go to Mexico when I was a kid, we would do that all the time. We would take lunches, like we would pack lunches and then walk like hours away from home and then come back.
What?
Yeah. How cute. It's fun stuff, you know, just stuff that you did with your cousins and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, not to bum you guys out, but time for a palate cleanser to at least lighten the mood a little bit.
You know how I feel like when it's time for the palate cleanser, I almost feel like when I used to go to church when I was younger and I was actually Catholic, they would do announcements and they're like, to the person that parked their Jeep in front, please move your car.
When you were a church boy that went to church and read your Bible?
Yeah.
Mm.
I read the Catholic Youth Bible, not the actual Bible.
Oh. Interesting. It had updated vernacular.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the...
And God said it was bussin'.
It was... Sheesh! Okay, so back to palate cleanser. So recently, my coworker recently got a new job. I think the beginning of this month was her first day like at the new job.
So she left where you currently work and then she got a new job.
So before then, and this was like in front of everyone, I was like, do you have your first day outfit chose out? And she was like,
bitch.
What? Did I tell you this story?
Like kindergarten?
Hold on, okay?
Like first day of school?
Kindergarten?
Like first day of school.
Okay, that's exactly how I compared it. I was like, yeah, you don't have your first day, like when you used to pack or prepare your first outfit for the school year and like lay it down on the bed, you're like, damn, I'm gonna look good. And they were all like, everyone laughed and they're like, no, who does that? And I'm like, fuckers, I did that.
I did that too. What are you talking about?
No, I do that for jobs too.
Me too.
Okay, good. Okay, at least we're on that same page.
It's like, that's something weird. I remember my mom, every first year, like every first day of school, my mom would dress, like get me dressed, and then we would go outside. Marieli would be out there, me and my sister and Jose, and we'd be like posing for pictures, like, ooh, look at my Spider-Man backpack. Like, you would like turn around with looking over the shoulder with the backpack.
I literally said that the other day. I was like, when you got to do the little turn and little
with your little backpack. Little step so they can see that your shoes light up
with your feet picture. With your feet turned up. Oh, those were good. It's like, do it again, and you like, yeah, and you like slam your foot and you're like, God, look at this.
Oh my
god. He's like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm Spider-Man light up shoes from Payless.
Wow, I can't believe they don't get their first day outfit ready.
I know. And I thought that was weird. I'm like, so what are you gonna wear? And she's like, I don't know, just whatever I find that day. I'm like, are you insane? You have to find a good outfit for your coworkers.
You
have
to set the mood. You have to let these people know who you are.
Exactly.
They have to see you through your outfit, mm-hmm. your first day outfit. Yep.
You got to know.
You can't never have another first day there.
Yep. You got to let them know from the very beginning. It's like, are you goofy? Are you serious? Are you approachable?
You got to let them know that you're a baddie.
Are you approachable? Can you talk to them? Can you say jokes to them? Do you want to go out to lunch?
Yes, I
eat hot
Cheetos on my desk. Yes, I ordered tacos for lunch. Thank you.
And an horchata.
Ew, please stop.
I had an horchata yesterday.
Horchata.
Horchata.
Please stop.
Anyway, hater. So yeah, I thought that was weird how it's like, you guys don't do that? That's weird. That's weird. I'm the only one that did.
New boot goofing. Hey.
New boots goofing. Mm. Exactly. Okay, another thing. On the topic about jobs. So one day I had a dream that I was at work.
Uh-huh.
And that
I hate those fucking dreams.
I fucking hate it because
why
feel
don't
like
we get paid for them?
I need some type of monetary compensation. Like, that's overtime.
That is overtime.
That is literally
you're literally
overtime.
Dreaming about work.
I'm literally doing transaction after transaction, filling out a loan application. I should in my dream I
et
should
cetera,
be
et cetera
et cetera et cetera other job requirements. But I should be compensated for that. I
exactly.
Need and I need.
I was on
cash
call
now.
On call in my
that
dream.
That was basically on call, and then I show up, and it's like, what happened to all my work?
Those are the fucking worst. Because then you wake up, and then you're like, I gotta go do that shit again. I did it while I was sleeping, and now I gotta do it again for real, and actually get paid for it this time.
Mm-hmm. Besides the point of moving past the point of work, okay, that's done and over with. I hate looking at. Hold on. Okay, I don't want you guys to take this the wrong way. But I hate looking at other people's dishes at their houses. Let me explain. Have you ever gone to like a friend's house and like, do you want anything to drink? And they're like, okay. And they give you like a fucking ugly ass cup. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I feel like that's how people feel when they come over and we give them like a fucking cup from like the mule. You know what I mean?
Because all we have is plastic cups.
Yup.
From all the restaurants we go eat.
You know what? They're free. And I think that's very much like an Oklahoma thing. Like, companies in Oklahoma specifically buy cups like that. Like, a lot of other places that I've lived at, like in Illinois, that's not really common.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, especially the plastic cups that you can, like, to go, basically.
I love them.
Me too. I was like, more people need everywhere? To fucking do that. What the fuck?
They're reusable. They wash them again. They don't have to throw them out.
If they get ugly, I throw them out. If they get scratched, I throw them
out. But you've already like reused them so many times.
I've already dedicated too much time.
We brought them. We feed the outside cats with the cups. Mm-hmm. We've painted. We've used it like to wash our paintbrushes in those cups. Mm-hmm. Like anything.
And then we drink out of them on that same day.
I think I used another cup and I mixed epoxy when I was doing resin stuff. Mm-hmm. I mixed it in that cup and then I just threw the cup away when I was done.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't use that one. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I hate going to other people's houses, not specifically because like our cups, because I'm a fan because I live here. But like other people's houses, when you go and like they give you like a weird dish, and I'm like, oh dude, this cup is ugly. And I think I remember watching or looking at a tweet the other day that was like, guests are coming over and need to bring out the fancy china. And it was the Shrek cups that were given out like at Burger King.
At McDonald's?
McDonald's. I was thinking like, was it Burger King?
But no, because McDonald's had the Shrek shape.
They had to recall them because there was like lead in the paint.
Bitch, what the fuck?
Do you remember that? You didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay, you did. Okay. And the funny thing is that I told my aunt and uncle about that and I think they didn't believe me for a while until they saw it on the news and then like, throw that shit out.
You know what? We might have ugly, like, drinking cup dishes, but our mugs are good. Like, we got some nice-ass mugs.
They're S-tier. They really are S-tier, right?
Yes, we have the best mugs. Anytime we go on vacation or somewhere and we see a nice mug, we buy the mug.
Yup.
I had to get rid of 10 mugs to make room for more of our mugs.
Yep, we put them in storage. We bought a storage unit specifically for our mugs.
Actually, I took them to work. You told me not to, but I took them there anyways.
Oh, I was just kidding about the storage unit. Stop. Stop rubbing yourself on here. Sorry, she was rubbing herself on the mics. Okay, speaking of Twitter. Oh my God, I'm so good at these segues today. So good at them. Okay, someone tweeted that their plane landed 30 minutes earlier, but how does that happen? I think that's a question for Jackie, honestly.
Jackie, if you're listening, please answer that question,
please,
for us.
Please, how, what do you mean earlier? Do they like speed up? Do they go faster than the speed limit?
They might be flying at a different elevation that they're supposed to.
Okay, but even then, like, do they just speed up? Like, if you say, no, my flight is 3 hours, imagine, but they get there in 2 hours, I'm like, did they speed?
Well, look at it this way. So, the shortest distance between two points, point A and point B, is a straight line, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're flying over, the world is curved.
Okay.
If they go like this and then like this, obviously it's going to take longer than if they go like this.
So, you're saying, if they go straight up and then straight down and let gravity do the work,
it'll take longer.
It'll take longer? Because the distance
to go further out and then come down.
I think it would take faster. I think I'd be faster.
I have never claimed to be a plane pilot, so I'm just making speculations at this
point. Why would it be... You know what? We're going to talk about this off the recording.
We're gonna put a pin on this. We're going to call Jackie when she's not in training, and then we will get back to everybody.
You know what? I'm going to win this argument. Another off topic.
Does anybody know any airline pilots? Can they answer this? Anybody in the audience? I would
love to know. Or someone who has some type of knowledge with flying.
Who knows? Maybe it's us shifting into that other dimension.
What does it mean that you got there earlier? Anyway, I feel like that one TikTok of the girl said, well, what's that mean? Well, it don't make sense, love. One last thing. Puckett's ghost. Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay, this is something quick. Just quick little story, guys. My coworker told me about this, that there's a towing place that supposedly...
Oh, I know this. You know this story? Actually, yes, I do.
Okay, so the story goes that it was a local thing. So local Oklahoma. Shout out to all my Okies, I guess. But it's a towing place that towed a car where a woman had died in. And I guess they took it to the tow place, the tow lot? Tow lot. That sounds good. Please help me. I'm struggling with English.
No, I think you're doing fine.
Thank you. Okay. So they take them to the tow lot, and and supposedly on the car lot. Oh my God.
I was just going to let you figure it out, but I'm like, I'm done.
Okay. They take them to the car lot. And security cameras picked up a woman walking around the parking lot. And I guess it was on the news. And this was like a few years back. Because when she told me about it, I was like, what the fuck?
It's the woman in the white dress floating above the cars. Yeah.
What the fuck?
We've seen that video like so many times.
I've never seen that. How did you
not know that was here?
I've never seen that video before. I didn't know about this. When she told me, I was like, are you fucking serious? Nuke's
top five.
There is a video about it, and I was like, what the fuck? Well, it was a news segment, but I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? And it's so close. I mean, never mind. I'm going to take that out. It's so local, is what I mean.
Why are you so against people triangulating, like,
I'm not going to tell
what side of the town, what side of town we live in, not even where our house is.
I'm not going to share that. I'm going to let people assume that we live in Oklahoma City.
We actually live in El Reno.
Saskatchewan, actually.
We live in El Reno in a shack.
So, yeah, I thought that was, you know, just something fun to include in there. And that's the end of the palate cleanser. So, I'm going to turn it over to you. Reporting live from another bitch's business.
Okay, so this story, I don't know why I just wasn't feeling the whole typing stuff out on the computer. So, I did this old school. I got a pad out and I got a pen out and I took notes.
Ooh.
I felt like maybe it was the need that I feel like I wanted to be back in Escuela or something.
Okay,
I
don't know. Color. Were you jealous of me?
Maybe. Maybe I want to be a college student. Have you ever heard of Mama Rosa?
No.
Or her name was Rosa Verduzco. Have you ever heard of it? Rosa Verduzco Verduzco.
No.
Okay, so we begin. Rosa Verduzco was born in 1934 and grew up in a very rich family. Anything she asked for, she got. I want it, I got it. That was her.
She wrote that. Oh my God. She really did. Ariana Grande.
Her parents actually owned several companies and several farms. Mm-hmm. And they were very successful at their peak. She had a pretty normal childhood. There wasn't anything like too crazy, no deaths in the family, no, you know, history of child abuse or anything like that. It was just kind of like very normal. But when she reached the age of 13, she showed an affinity for wanting to help the less fortunate, especially children. Children that were abandoned, children that roamed the streets, or children with no parents. So at the age of 13, she decided to adopt a child.
A child.
A child. That's surprising because a 13-year-old doesn't usually feel an instinct that strong to take care of somebody.
A 13-year-old?
Yeah, like taking care of a child. I mean, I get like girls playing with dolls and stuff like that, but that's just kind of strange.
Hell no.
Well, anyways, so it's kind of surprising that a 13-year-old felt the instinct as strongly as she did to adopt a child, especially off the streets. So where this story mostly takes place is in the Mexican state of Michoacán. When she started bringing all these kids home, because she brought home more than one at that point, her
where
parents...
Where is she finding these kids?
They're, I mean, just like in Mexico, they're, especially back then, this was the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
The 30s. Well, she was 13 in the 40s. So this was the 40s. There was a lot of... It was after the recession. There was a lot of poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were just like letting their kids roam the streets. They were like, we don't want you anymore. And they would just kind of let them go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So when she started bringing all these kids home, her parents weren't really thrilled about it. But as time went on and she started bringing more kids home and she actually showed responsibility, like a very like... diligent responsibility, they kind of became more warm to the idea of her taking care of all these kids. So now I gotta flip the... Sorry, guys. I'm actually flipping pages because I really did take notes on paper this time. So they began to accept and actually started to support her in her endeavors. Mm-hmm. Eventually, she had 7 kids under her care still in her teenage years. Wow. 7. Adopted.
That's a lot of kids.
So when she's getting to the end of her teens, her dad passes away and her mom sells some of the businesses. Rosa at this point convinces her mom to buy her a piece of land so she can build a compound where she can take care of her children when, which her mom granted. Obviously they were they had plenty of money. So the mom was like, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now by 1961, she was living with approximately 40 children.
Oh my God.
How she old lived was she? With them. 1961, she was born 1934,
20s, 30s.
She was in her 20s.
With 40 kids.
Yeah.
Did she have the facilities to...
Okay, well, some of these children were orphans, some were abandoned by their parents, some were even surrendered willingly to Rosa. In 1973, the Gran Familia established itself as a civil association in the region of Zamora, Michoacán, Mexico. Beginning that year, hundreds of children and teens came to live and pass through the compound. That number is actually estimated to be at least 7,000 children over the course.
Oh my God.
This is really when everyone started to call and refer to it as La Gran Familia. For this compound to stay afloat, Rosa, who worked as a teacher, received... donations, grants, and even children that went out to sell. So they literally worked for her.
Excuse me?
They received food, clothes, diapers, bottles, formula, etc. as donations. The children worked selling fruits, newspapers, cleaning windshields, panhandling, and some even worked at nearby businesses.
I guess it was a lucrative business.
Yeah, back so then. she had all her kids working for her. If they weren't quote unquote studying at the compound, they were working.
So was this like a legal practice, or is this something like, was it normal basically, or was this illegal? Is what I'm asking.
They were all her kids.
So that gives her the legal authority to make them work?
I mean, in Mexico, there's no labor laws.
At this time or like today?
At that point. And even today, even now, the labor laws are kind of, there's no like.
Excuse me?
There's no minimum hour, 40 work week and shit like that. The laws are a little different in Mexico, okay?
Okay.
None of them were allowed to keep the money. They all they were made was given to Mama Rosa and to help run the compound, to help obtain food, to help obtain supplies, and
they didn't keep any of it.
No, they didn't keep any of it. Okay, it was all for her.
Fucked up. Fucked up.
Mayors, organization, Mexican presidents, and important political figures also donated thousands of pesos to the organization. She was described as a woman that could get things done. She moved quickly to secure funds and make close relationships with the people in power. These included Ernesto Zedillo, Vicente Fox, and Felipe Calderón, ex-governors Lázaro Cárdenas, Leonel Godel Rangel, Jesús Reina García, and Fausto Vallejo Figueroa were among some of the people that actually went and visited the compound. And what it was is that, like, when they were running for office, they would, for a publicity stunt, they would show up, take pictures, give them some things.
Look how humble I am.
So basically, all of Mexico knew of La Gran Familia. Like, it was a very famous compound because everybody knew what was happening. It's like the commercials here in the U.S. It's like, for 10 cents a day, help this African child in need and blah, blah, blah. This was like their version of that.
Okay. So it was heavily like publicized.
It was heavily publicized and stuff like that. You would think with all these kids working, the donations and the grants being plentiful, it would be running well. She really had everyone fooled. Everybody thought that these children were being well taken care of, and at the age of 18, they were leaving, but that was not the case.
Oh, no.
So it was reported that they were leaving this compound at the age of 18 with an education. So Mama Rosa herself claimed to give her children elementary, secondary, and intermediate education to all her children, as well as having a deal with the College of Guanajuato to give their children free education. So as soon as they left the compound, quote unquote, they would go study at this college and then get their degree, is what was reported. Like, she said, yeah, so many of my kids have gone here and all this stuff, like, but it was just hearsay. They had supposedly everything worked out for them so they could leave the home educated and ready to integrate into society. So they had had a really bad start in life, and supposedly coming through here, she would take care of them and then get them ready for life as adults. As well as there being children, there was also adults, oddly enough. After these grown children were of age to leave, they were still living there for a very long time, refusing to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, after several former complaints on July 15th, 2014, the police were forced to investigate and visit the compound to see if they had merit. They were like, why are so many people complaining? We have to show up. When the police arrived, the perfect home Mama Rosa had been selling to the whole country was not what was actually going on. The conditions of the place were deplorable. They were unfit for animals or people alike.
Oh my God.
Yes. When the police walked the compound, there were rat's nests, bugs, ticks, lice, decomposing food, dilapidated rooms, and hundreds of malnourished children laying around everywhere.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures, and oh my God.
It's a fucking mess. This police search was undertaken only because 50 formal complaints had been filed against her.
So when you said that people didn't leave when they turned 18, was it willingly?
I will explain that here in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well,
so,
sorry.
But to me, it just goes to show the police aren't shit. They had to have 50 formal fucking complaints for them to show up. These Mexican presidents, these politicians all showed up, and nobody thought, hey, we're giving this lady hundreds and thousands of pesos.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check up and see what's going on. No, that is exactly not what happened.
That is the opposite of what happened.
Exactly. All of these formal complaints were actually filed against Mama Rosa. La Gran Familia compound had been operating at this point for 50 years. There had been hundreds of people that had come through and gone by this point. The age ranges of the people that were there at that point were literally from newborns to 40-something years old that had actually been present since the beginning of the opening of the compound. Obviously, at this point, Mama Rosa, at the age of 81, had to respond to these crimes. Although she was 81, she was described as a strong woman that was well-fed, tall, strong, and still very much capable. So that's probably all that fucking food she was eating.
Yeah, all the money that she was fucking hogging for herself.
While these crimes were investigated by the police, they closed down La Gran Familia compound. At least 500 minors were rescued from her. Most had all suffered mental, physical, and sexual abuse.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I feel like a reporter flipping my little
reporting pad. Life from another bitch's business. Yes.
Many of the residents were interviewed and described the hell they lived in for years. A child that was interviewed described ending... Okay, so I'm going to preface this by saying that this interview that I read was in Spanish, so I translated it. Mm-hmm. A child that was interviewed described ending up at the compound at an older age and being appalled. So usually some of these kids would end up at this compound at very young ages, like 1 or 2 or 3 or something, you know, very, very, very young. Mm-hmm. This girl like showed up when she was 8 or 9. Like she already was very cognizant of her surroundings. Mm-hmm. She had some, you know, a little bit of education and stuff like that. She said the physical abuse started immediately. She tells, it took me about a month to eat anything. The food was rotten. It smelled putrid in there.
What the yes. fuck?
Mama Rosa punished her children by beating us, gaslighting us, making us feel worthless, and she kept food from us. But most of all, I remember the isolation, said another one of the children. Mama Rosa had a special little building apart from the compound she used to abuse her children. This shack had one window and one door and was full of feces. The victims were banished to this isolation and weren't fed for days. No one was allowed to check up on them. They had to relieve themselves where they stood.
Why? And so why did she isolate them?
I don't know. It was punishment for whatever they had done. Mama Rosa was not the only person that was under investigation either. There was 7 other accomplices that were arrested.
Oh,
so it was just, it was her, and then she had people working for her.
And two nobody... of which, 50 complaints. It took 50 complaints. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that.
Right.
That it took 50 fucking complaints from people.
It's going to get kind of interesting. So two of the people that worked for her were blamed and were responsible by most of the sexual abuse experienced by some of the victims. So it was two of the guys. Mm-hmm. This is a quote. You could ask us, why didn't you just escape? But we couldn't. We were scared. We were scared of the support she got from the local community and the local police. She would let the police know, who in turn would let the community know. They would patrol the area and back we went, remembered one of her children. So he's saying that whenever they escaped, she would notice right away that one of the kids was missing or a few of them were missing, and then she'd call the police. And so then the police would put out a bulletin. And so obviously, like, this huge compound, the community around them, everybody knows them. Mm-hmm. And the police, everybody thinks that this place is such a great place to live. They think that these kids were just having like a rough time, and so they were just running away, which, not knowing that this place was fucking living hell on earth.
Do you think she had the police in her back pocket at all?
Just wait.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Just wait. Spoilers.
Just wait.
Right, Leo?
Just wait. So they literally couldn't escape. And this is something that came up a lot, that kids would run away and she would call the police. She had the whole community backing her up. Mm-hmm. They didn't know any better. The police was helping her. The community was helping her. So literally these kids would run away for maybe 10, 15 minutes and be right back. And in the isolation building, they would go for a few days. No food, no water, nobody checking up on them. They had to shit themselves.
Fuck that. Hell no. She's such a fucking wannabe Mother Teresa. She wanted to be Mother Teresa so bad. And
Mother Teresa wasn't that great of a person either.
Well, Mama Rosa or whatever the fuck, she's a flop.
Yeah. Well, anyways, one of the nightmares the children had to endure is the intense work. They had to do adult labor, like lifting shit, construction, and stuff like that for the compound, or were forced. So when they would have to go work, and when they came home and they would go out together, they would have to panhandle. So when they weren't doing manual labor, they were asked to ask people for money. So at no point did they get any free time. Either they were working or they were working.
Oh my God.
And they were not getting an education like they said they were. She was not educating those kids.
I hate this.
Yeah. Like I said before, they were made to eat rotten food, not just expired, like fully covered in maggots. Which is strange because they constantly received donations of fresh food. So what was happening to all the fresh food? It almost sounds like she's maliciously letting the food go rotten so she could feed her kids rotten food.
But what was her intention? What was the whole point of this?
I you know, like a lot of people are saying that maybe her intentions were pure when it first started, like when she was younger. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of just got out of hand for her and she couldn't do it anymore. And there, you know, I read stories sometimes about how nurses get caring fatigue or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
I've never
heard. When you work with patients so much and like you get fatigued of people, you get fatigued of taking care of other people.
Of being dependent on.
Yes. And so like these nurses like become terrible nurses and they start like hurting their patients.
Oh my God. I've never heard of that.
I don't remember what it's called, but it's something that happens to doctors. Basically, people in the health field that happens mm-hmm. to. They get burnt out just like we do at a regular job. Mm-hmm. They need vacation time too. And people are saying that this is what happened to her. She got so tired of helping and dedicating herself that she just went off the fucking rails crazy.
But to do a complete 180, it just seems...
Maybe she was malignant from the start. Nobody knows.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe it didn't start with completely pure intentions. But I feel like people sometimes, if she did have bad intentions, it may have been something to do with like a power dynamic where she wanted some type of control over someone.
Maybe. The adults that I was talking about earlier literally could not leave. Usually, when someone turned 18, they have the ability to leave and start their own life. Supposedly, at this point, as per what everybody else knows, they should have had an education. They should be going off to college. They should have a skill. They should have a trade. They should be educated. And it was not the case. So, imagine trying to leave this compound at 18 and you know nothing. You barely know how to read. You barely know how to write. You haven't had a formal education. Mm-hmm. And so Mama Rosa is basically telling you, like, you're not shit. What are you going to do? How are you going to leave? She would manipulate them to stay. And a lot of them would stay years after they turned 18. They were full grown, like cognizant adults. And she had beaten them down mentally so bad that they wouldn't leave. They would stay with her.
Wow.
Yeah. On the Gran Familia official Facebook page, it stated that the foundation was started in 1947. It also said that this was another chance. So it was saying that like it was a chance for kids to get a better start in their life. It's a second chance. They started out with parents that were drug addicts. It was basically trying to paint like the parents of these kids in a really bad light. Like saying, these kids ended up with me. Look, I'm taking care of them because their parents were drug addicts and they're thieves and they're sexual abusers.
Kind of make it seem like...
Like she's a good person. Like she was a really good person for taking care of them.
She's the better alternative, basically. Yes.
And something that I didn't know up to this point in the story is that she actually adopted all of them. Almost all of the kids that came through her compound were legally adopted by her, so they all had her last name. They were all her children.
They were so-and-so Mama Rosa?
Yes. Verduzco. Last name Verduzco.
Oh. Sorry. Mama Rosa. First name Mama. Last name Rosa.
Rosa. Something that was really sad that happened is that, of course, like I've been telling you, that there's sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these girls would end up pregnant, and guess what she would do?
Oh my God.
She would let these girls, whoever could carry to full term under those conditions, would have their baby, and she would immediately take that baby away and take it to go get registered and say, hey, somebody dropped this kid off. I don't know who the parents are. I'm adopting them. And so literally every baby that was born on her compound was her baby at that point. Nobody kept their kids.
I'm sick of this.
Yeah. In the literally in the eyes of the law, these were all her legitimate children.
They were legally her property, and I feel like we've had discussions outside in a outside of the podcast setting of parental guardianship and what parents see as their children
as their property,
as their property. And it's really understand weird. I understand in the legal terms, yes, I understand that they're dependent, but at the same time, to push these, well, specifically was pushing ideas onto a child as an extension of the parent, mm-hmm. instead of seeing them as
they're their own person.
Individual person.
They are not you part two. They're their own person. The things that you experienced in your life and didn't get to do, you can't force your kid to do that.
No.
You had your chance and you didn't get a chance to do it. You can suggest to them and want them to do something like that, but you can't make them do that. And I think that's where a lot of parents fail now.
Yeah.
It's like they think of their child as their part two, their chance to live vicariously through them.
I didn't get nice things, so I'm going to give my kid nice things. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But they're also not your second chance at life, basically. Yeah, I know
we've had discussions about it. Or people that force their kids to follow certain, like, career paths.
Oh, my God.
You see that a lot, especially in, like, Latinx and Hispanic communities.
Oh, a lot of immigrant communities, actually.
It's scary how it's, like,
oh, you have to be a doctor or a lawyer. It's like, I literally do not want to do that.
Yeah. Anyways, getting back to the story. After all this came out and was publicized, Mama Rosa was arrested and was brought to the police. Almost immediately that she was arrested, she got off scot-free.
Why?
People literally could not believe that this was real. And she had some really good connections in the political, with politics.
Okay, but why didn't they just go into the compound?
I don't know what to tell you. They let her out. She was friends with some really high people.
I hate this.
The other people that were also involved was Felipe Serrano Gomez, Lourdes Verduzco, David Verduzco, David Rogelio, Miguel Ibarra, Rosa Maria Vivieros, Enrique Hernandez, and Claudia Rodriguez, which are the other seven people that were involved.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened in the early 2000s. So at this point, there are a lot of victims that were interviewed. So there's a lot of source material to go look, to go through on YouTube. When this happened, obviously there was like, at least 1,000 or more of kids that have been there. So a lot of them were interviewed, and a lot of interviews you can watch online.
Yeah. This was in 2014 too. This was
very recent.
Yeah. This was very, very recent.
One of the victims that stuck out to me was this young woman that turned 18. She was trying to bargain her release, and Mama Rosa refused. That girl was forced to work and stay for an additional 13 years with nothing to show for it. She had to give up all the money she ever made for the compound, for the betterment of the compound. So she literally stayed after 18, and like you would think, maybe she's just, you know, she could save up and try to get out. No. She stayed 13 extra years for no reason, didn't get an education, nothing. And a lot of these people ended up running away when they were adults. So not everybody, like, stayed, but could you imagine, like, running away and not having any formal education or, like, a skill or anything?
Like, where do you go?
You have no family, you're an orphan, you've been with this lady for your whole fucking life, and she's beaten you down every single day, she's manipulated you, you feel like you're worthless.
She's the anti-Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A different victim retells that after she was sexually abused, she had two children. So she was abused on two occasions and had kids that came from it. Rosa took her kids and immediately adopted them. Eventually, the girl became of age and left. She came back looking for her children. Rosa told this young woman she would have to give her, she would give her children back if she paid her thousands of pesos, an almost impossible amount for someone that was left with no skills or education. So she would basically manipulate these people that did get out. She would manipulate them and she would say, if you want to see your kid, you have to give me 1,000,000 pesos. Which was unobtainable. It was really unobtainable.
What is that, like $500,000?
Yes, it was very much unobtainable for them. She only let them see their children once a month for 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She was very manipulative. I feel like these women that lived, especially the women that lived there, lost their childhood and lost their children.
I mean, they don't really have anything to go on.
Yeah.
Like, this woman ruined their life. Hundreds of kids' lives. And for what?
Yeah.
What did she gain from all of this?
I couldn't even tell you.
So, what happened to her?
Okay, I'm gonna keep going.
Oh, sorry.
Many Mexicans love Rosa Verduzco for all her charity work, quote unquote. She had supposedly dedicated her whole life to raising, educating, and housing children from broken homes. To her victims, she was a devil, strict, forceful, unbearable, vile, and petty. Strangely enough, though, when the investigation was happening, a lot of her children defended her. She was a strict, mean woman, but she housed them when no one else would, is what they would say. So, so much was going on in the media at this time that that a lot of people didn't know who to believe. The children that condemned her and the other group that supported her was almost split, was almost an even split. So people didn't know who to believe at that point. And I think that's like a very Munchausen syndrome.
Yeah, that's a very, that's weird how, what am I saying? It's weird that it's argued. When you can, there's a location. This is not something that's like a conspiracy theory. Yeah. It's like evidence is maybe subjective. Like, this is something that you can literally go to location, like the location, and see the fucking terrible living conditions that these people were in. I'm looking at pictures right now, and I'm at a loss of words.
To be honest with you, after everything that we've been through these last couple years, are you really surprised? I don't feel like I can be surprised anymore about the lengths people will go to. The mental gymnastics they do in their head to justify something.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. The mental hoops people jump to say, oh, this isn't anti-black. This is this. Or this isn't like Nazis. This is this. It's, I mean, it's pretty.
Or justification of bombing.
It's pretty fucking crazy. By the way, free Palestine. That's all I'm saying.
Period.
So when the compound was closed in 2014, it never opened its doors again. Rosa Verduzco disappeared. They never looked for her too hard either. She was older and no one really wanted to convict her. This exposed the negligence that was allowed. All these political figures wanted to look good, so no one thought to check this lady.
Nobody wanted to touch it.
Rosa Verduzco passed in Mexico City June 2018. She died of a brain aneurysm, not having seen any jail time.
She deserved worse.
She really did.
Yeah, I saw this this article. Mama Rosa, head of Mexico controversial foster home, dies at 84. Controversial? What is that wording? What do you mean controversial? As if it's like, oh, that's my opinion that it was bad.
So listen to the conspiracy theories. Oh. And I think that some of these aren't conspiracy theories. I think these are some of these are conspiracy facts.
Conspiracy facts.
Money. So much money was funneled into this place by governors, Mexican presidents, local government, and other associations, as well as the state, and no one thought to come inspect. Was it negligence? Sources say no. She was inspected at least several times, and no one reported her. They think that she had political figures sleeping with her children, that they used the compound for money laundering for cartels and corrupt government. She used her children to help cartels disperse their drugs because nobody thinks to check on children. You know, it'll be easier for them to be mules for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
No one has been able to definitively come up with an answer because anyone who looks too deep disappears.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Also, this is after the fact. I was kind of like looking up some articles, and it was supposedly Mama Rosa used several of her children to traffic organs.
Oh my God.
Several of her children died while under her care. After the fact, when people started digging and asking questions, the victims that they interviewed confirmed that sometimes every once in a while, someone would be chosen and lose their organs. But not often enough to arise suspicion.
I'm going to be sick. I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to throw up.
There are certain things that I left out. Some of the sexual stuff that these kids were made to do. I mean, they were pretty detailed, but I decided to leave them out just because I didn't think they were appropriate.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. So our audience, you know, trigger warning and some things I just would rather not talk about on the podcast. And it was drawing a line.
Yeah, drawing a line for us, since we've talked about people eating brains out of like soup.
Don't fuck with kids. That's all I'm saying.
Period.
And that's the story of Rosa Verduzco.
Wow.
So I was left feeling very... Sometimes when I do true crime stories like this, I finish it feeling very empty.
Mm-hmm.
Like it drained my energy to read about this and write about this.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because I didn't know anything about this. No. Nothing. I'd never heard about this. And this is something prominent that was very famous in Mexico that happened in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Wow. Heavy shit. I don't know how to recover from that.
Can you?
The thing is I want to know why. That's the thing.
And it's not like you can ask her anymore. She's dead.
Like, I want to understand what was her intentions from the beginning, if they really were good. Like, what drove her to that?
I mean, and I urge people to watch some interviews with her. It's, I forgot to say, my computer turned off and I can't turn it back on. I think it might have died. So I got my information from this video from Elizabeth M. Mm-hmm. on YouTube. And let me tell you, I think she's Venezuelan or Puerto Rican. She says the word bicho. She was saying, habían bichos en las habitaciones. And I'm like...
That is Venezuelan. That is not a Caribbean person.
Okay.
That means something else.
Oh, yeah. Oops. If you listen to our episodes in Spanish and wish that we had more, I definitely urge you to watch Elizabeth M. on YouTube. All her videos are in Spanish. She's very concise. She's very articulate. She knows her shit. And she has some really interesting cases from the United States, from Canada, from Latin America, from the Caribbean. So she's got a good mix of true crime stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely... I saw some videos on there. I'm like, oh, say watch for later. And the whole video is in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So you could literally watch this with your mom or your dad or whoever. And these videos are good.
Tan buenos. Actually, we should probably work on translating some for the English language audience. Can you spell the name of it one more time? You can deletrearlo en español si quieres.
Okay. So this video that I used to do my research for this case is called The Hostel of Horror, Elizabeth M. It's Elizabeth and then the letter M.
And you said that's on YouTube?
Yes. Did you find her?
Yes. Okay. Wow. Oh my god. Oh my god.
She's got a lot of good videos. A lot of good videos. And in Spanish, so... But they're all true crime. It's not really anything paranormal. It's all true crime.
Wow. And they're all in Spanish. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I do want to leave on a good note. Hopefully, maybe... I've been watching a lot of Twitch streamers, specifically people that play like the new Resident Evil game, because mm-hmm. I don't want to play it and I don't want to spend $60.
Are you fucking kidding me? Today I tried so hard to buy a PS5.
Did you do it?
No. Today it was, I think Target had a drop, Walmart had a drop, the Sony store had a drop, and Newegg had a shuffle. So
that's so rude,
and I didn't get any of them. I was not able to, and I tried so hard to buy one because I really want to play that new game.
The Resident Evil game is only on the PS5?
Yes.
What the fuck? I didn't know that.
I want to get beat up by that big ass lady with the hat. I want her to beat my ass.
Me too. But I've been watching a lot of streamers. One particular one is a Haughty Chicken. She's an Australian streamer. She is an older woman. So I think if you guys like watching streamers I think you guys should definitely look into her. Also, Bill Maher, which is a fucking another flop. He recently...
He's from here.
From Oklahoma or from the U.S.?
Bill Maher?
Yeah.
Is it that one guy that comes in like, Kristen Wiig movies?
No, he's some... He claims he's, like, a liberal person, but he's just an asshole.
Hold on, I have to look his ass up.
He started talking shit about people streaming. It's like, why are you going to watch people play video games if you can play them yourself? I was like, bitch, people watch sports. What are you talking about?
You could literally argue that about everything.
I could literally argue, like, why is that weird? Why is it weird that people watch, like, younger kids watch people play with their toys? Like, little kids play with their toys. That's a thing. That's an industry. People like it.
Oh, yeah. I don't like this fucking asshole.
Yeah, that fucking flop ass.
Why is it always these Mickey Rourke looking motherfuckers? It always has to be these Mickey Rourke looking motherfuckers.
I don't know who that is. Hold on. Mickey Rourke. Oh my god. Okay, and on that note, so, I think we should end this.
So, he used to be fairly handsome back in, like, the 80s and the 70s when he was very popular in movies, but then he did a lot of plastic surgery and it was botched.
Flop.
And actually, a lot of people were joking around and saying that Zac Efron was the new...
Oh no, that's so sad.
Because I don't know if he's just recently gotten work done, but his face looks a lot different than it used to.
And the thing is, it's like, I think it's... As much as we want to make fun of him, I don't know what goes through a celebrity's mind, especially for having started acting at such a young age. I'm sure there is something going on in his mind that's not completely right. So I hope he gets...
The help he needs?
Not necessarily the help he needs, but I hope he comes to an understanding with himself and his looks.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's like these child celebrities... The ones que me pueden, like, they hurt my heart when something happens. So, like, when Amanda Bynes, when all this went down with Amanda Bynes a few years back, I was like, damn, I felt really bad for her. She was an absolute
queen.
Yes, and especially because you know things happen to them.
Yeah.
You know. There are stories or rumors that swirl around about those Nickelodeon executives and what they did to Victoria Justice and Ariana Grande and all the girls that worked on those shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine what they went through. And I mean, they lose their minds for a reason. They I don't want to say lose their minds. That's not what happens. It's they
go through things they that go, people, especially their age, should not go through.
Yes.
Wow. I wanted to end on a good note.
I was going
to
say, this went in a really weird direction.
Okay. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Thanks for listening, and for all the new listeners, welcome. And for, well, yeah, all the new listeners, because like I said, I've been receiving a lot of messages from people saying, like, hey, we really like your podcast. And honestly, that makes me so happy. Ah! So thanks. So please follow us on Instagram at KissSpookyPodcast and on Twitter at KissSpookyPod. You can also email us any story suggestions or your own scary stories at KissSpookyPodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Taylor Turner for the artwork and Kyle Fields for the intro music.
Not Cody Barnes.
And don't forget to tell someone you love how much they mean to you.
Bye.
That's how you clear a bitch.